Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome one and all to Trisha's True Crime Radio. Thank you for joining us tonight. Again, another wonderful show on this holiday weekend. And tonight's sponsor for our show would like to ask everyone who is able or inclined to please donate to the TravisAlexanderFund.com. That's www.TravisAlexanderFund.com to assist the Alexander family with their expenses as this trial nears completion. All right, I got to be honest. I feel like I have been sucked into a Twilight Zone type vortex in my life, especially Friday. Friday, I had my first rodeo experience. I had to help herd runaway horses on a freeway using my car. That happened. And then just a little while later, I'm parked at the Whole Foods grocery store thinking I'm doing the right thing environmentally by shopping at Whole Foods. So, you know, I'm cool and groovy and have hairy legs and the whole bit. I'm parked there and I see this guy. He's this bike riding, hairy, smelly, barefooted, big tooth freak. He leaves a note on my car and the note said, quote, "The earth hates you." 10 minutes later, maybe less, I'm pulled over by a cop. Now, this cop had so many lights on his car, I felt like Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. You know, when he's at the railroad crossing and the spaceship comes up right behind his car and he sees all those lights. Well, looking in my rearview mirror, I thought at any moment I was going to start floating up. And then with my luck, I get sucked into an alien craft. It'd be full of aliens who are bike riding, hairy, smelly, big-footed, big-tooth freaks who like to give visitors notes and anal probes. Anyway, just to let you know, the horses I attempted to herd were fine. The police came. Everything worked out well. Really could care less that the smelly freak thinks the earth hates me. And the good news is the cop that pulled me over spent more time petting my dog than dealing with me. He only stopped me because I had a headlight out, thank goodness. I literally haven't been outside my house since. I feel safe in my little snow cone shack of a house. But you know what? And I bet you feel this way too. There is something that keeps me up at night, stops me cold when I'm reading a book and it pops into my head. Something that no matter what happens in my day or how safe I feel, when I think of this, my mind comes to a screeching halt. And that is a picture of Travis Alexander dead in the shower. No matter how safe I try and make myself, I will never escape that picture. And when this happens, I always think of Travis's family. No matter what they try and do from here on out in their lives, they will always have to live with that picture of their loved one dead in a shower. It's almost too much for me to wrap my mind around. I feel so deeply for them, and I hope and pray that all the love they're getting from all around the world is enough to sustain them in their quest for justice, and it will happen. In fact, three jury members and the foreman went on Good Morning America, not together. The jury foreman went on Friday, and I think the three jury members went on today or yesterday. And it was very interesting to hear what they have to say. Now, with us tonight is Katie Coolady, and we'll get with her in just a moment. But first up, she is the author of a book that you absolutely have to have in your life so you know how to deal with people who are looking at you. That is Dr. Lillian Glass, The Body Language Advantage. Dr. Glass gives us all the information we need to know to make the correct judgments about people. And Dr. Glass, welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio.
Oh, Trisha, I'm so happy to be on your show because
you
do such wonderful things.
Oh, thank you. It's a fun show, and even though we deal with topics that aren't really fun, I try and make it interesting at least. And thank goodness, guests like
you do a lot of good work for people, and I'm proud of you.
Thank you. Oh, thank you. That makes me feel really good. Thank you very much. Dr. Glass, did you get a chance to see the jury foreman? I don't know if he could really tell anything by his body language, but
sure.
Did you happen to see the foreman give his interview and then the three jurors on Good Morning America?
I sure did. I saw everything, and it was quite fascinating because even though a lot of people don't really agree with what the foreman may have said, we need to take his advice and learn from it, or his not his advice, rather, but his comments and learn from it. And one of the things he showed us is that looks do matter, and people do judge you based on how you come across. And he even talked about that, that when he first came in the room, he wasn't even sure that Jody was the defendant. And all three of the other jurors confirmed that, because she didn't look like the person who would do something like that. But then when they heard the evidence, it certainly changed their minds. But just to wrap their mind around the attractiveness factor, that's something that needs to be looked at by both the prosecution and the defense when they're going through making another case for Jody. For her life or death, the other thing we learned from him is that the aggressive style doesn't work. It is offensive to some
people.
So perhaps Juan Martinez, maybe it was great for us, the audience, and people listening, and for the family, because it was a cathartic release. But it wasn't good for a lot of the jurors. So he may want to tone down his style. And then we also found out that that the fact that he said that Travis had mentally and emotionally abused her, that speaks volumes. Again, whether you agree with it or not, it doesn't matter. The fact that a jury or several jurists did agree with that, it needs to be taken into consideration and learned from in the next round.
Well, Dr. Glass, I find that very interesting. That is the thing that made me, when he said, I believe that Travis Alexander mentally and verbally abused Jody, I literally, you know what I felt like? You know in the cartoons when the character is squished down by a big steamroller and they stand up and they're flat and they go, blah, 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 and shake their head? That's exactly what I was doing for about 2 minutes.
But
I couldn't believe he said that.
With all due respect, you know, even though you and I may feel that way, the fact that the juror felt that way, you know, is really all that matters. And when we're talking about abuse, you know, we're talking about the case of physical abuse versus mental and physical. And physically, nobody bought the fact that he abused her physically. In fact, by her own words, she said on 48 Hours that, you know, she didn't, that wasn't the case at all, that he didn't abuse her, he wasn't like that. So there was no question about that, and you could see that was a lie. But as far as emotional and mental abuse, you know, just the fact that he did engage in sex with her, and then he was going out to Mexico to be with another woman. I mean, in some people's mind, that may be a form of abuse.
And you're right, and I agree with what you're saying. I think that's what threw cold water on a lot of people watching the interview, but you're absolutely right. We need to remove ourselves from our reality here where we know a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
And put it in there. And I started thinking, I thought, okay, if I just wipe my slate clean on the Jody Arias trial, and I think about what the email said, you know, you're a sociopath, you're the worst person in the world, I perhaps maybe would have come into the same conclusion myself. I don't know.
You may have. You know, and even, you know, as women and men, I mean, nobody wants to be used. Nobody wants to be taken advantage of. And even though, you know, Jody was certainly a willing partner, the bottom line is he didn't want anything to do with her anymore. The relationship was over as far as he was concerned. But yet he allowed her back in. And to her, that was like, oh, there's hope. And then they engage in sex. She manipulates him through sex because that's their common bond. And then he takes a shower and says, oh, well, you better hurry up and leave probably because I'm going to go to Mexico to be with this other girl. Well, it didn't make her feel great, and she probably went off on him. And so, you know, again, it's no defense about Jody. She had no business doing that. But again, you can't just look at him as a pristine person here, because the fact that a jurist did state that there was some type of mental and emotional abuse going on, that speaks volumes.
It really does, and I think it's important, especially for the listeners to this radio show and to WebSleuth.com, when it comes to juries, we really have to remove ourselves from what we know and start fresh. And to just pretend like we're in the jury seat, and we may all come to the same conclusions. We may not. Now, we do know that the split was 8-4, for
right.
the death penalty, 4 against it. Mm-hmm. And according to the jurors we've heard from so far, everybody got along. It was really a easy, hands-down murder one conviction. Mm-hmm. But apparently the 4 that were against the death penalty were immovable. And
right.
Dr. Glass, what do you think about that? I mean,
well,
what did the 4 see that the 8 didn't, and vice versa?
Well, I think that, you know, you're dealing with your own set of values here. You know, we can all say, of course, I'd say the death penalty. In fact, you can poll people all day long, and they could say, yes, I believe in it, and I'd like to be the one to push the button or to hit the syringe or whatever. But then when push comes to shove, and then you realize, oh, my gosh, this is another person's life, and it's on
mm-hmm.
my shoulders. Ouch. I don't want that responsibility. So that may be what played in a lot of cases here. The woman, one of the women jurors who did vote for the death penalty, she was pretty shaken up. She was pretty, I believe it was juror number 6, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
She was a 9/11 operator, retired 9/11
yeah.
operator. And she looked pretty haggard. She was torn up. It was very difficult for her. You could see where her decision took its toll on her. That
exactly.
she felt so bad that she even had to say, you know, I'm sorry. But that's a pretty difficult thing. But, you know, Trish, and for your listeners out there, it's really not about life or death at this point, because her life is going to be death.
Mm-hmm.
There is a video that's out there done by a correctional officer who was a deputy deputy warden at the prison that she will be in. And he talks about the terrible conditions that are ongoing at that institution and
mm-hmm.
how she will be isolated. That's going to be her death, not being in the media. I think what we really saw that was quite shocking was how she played the media, how she micromanaged,
mm-hmm.
how she would be shot with video, that they weren't allowed to shoot her below the waist to show her stripes. They weren't allowed to show her in shackles. They were only allowed to ask her certain questions. And
mm-hmm.
you heard a lot of these reporters come across very namby-pamby and very weak
mm-hmm.
and very, oh, yes, Jody, I'm so happy I have an interview with you, kind of kissing up to her. But there was one really great reporter, Ryan Owen from ABC,
yes.
and he was having
oh,
none
yeah.
of it. In fact, he videotaped
mm-hmm.
her with her shackles on and with her stripes. And he also asked her the most point-blank questions
that
took her aback.
Yes.
And I did
mm-hmm.
a blog on it where I showed the actual visual body language of how she dealt with this. One of the things that we saw in that and that whole interaction with Ryan Owen and Jody is the hatred and the anger and the rage, the flash of rage that came out of her face when he poised a question to her, and she retaliated by calling him a hater. Now,
mm-hmm.
we saw a glimpse of that in just that interview. Can you imagine what Travis saw in their relationship? If things aren't going Jody's way, she's going to retaliate, and it's going to be a rude awakening for her based on the video that was done by this warden that will show her in a very, very different situation, because she won't be able to manipulate anybody. She won't be in control. She won't have
mm-hmm.
a lot of people to show off in front of, to control, to use her feminine wiles, so to speak. And
mm-hmm.
this will not be putting her in the best of shape mentally.
Exactly. And I want to give the address of your blog, because I know our listeners will definitely want to read that. It's Dr. Lily Glass. bodylanguageblog.wordpress.com. Is that correct?
I guess it is. Yes, thank you.
Okay, great. So, and you can also go to drlillianglass.com, can you not?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you've got to read Dr. Glass's blog, and of course get that book. It is absolutely fascinating. We have some calls. I'm going to go to the phone first, and then I'll go to the chat room next. We have some very interesting questions, but let's
great.
Go to area code 831. Area code 831, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you, Tricia. This is Zoo Mama.
Hi, Zumama.
And hello, Dr. Glass.
Hi, Zumama. Nice to have you on the show.
It's an honor to speak with you.
Thank you.
With all the various faces and moods that we saw from Jody during this trial, how do you interpret her reddened and, I guess, near teary face when that non-verdict decision was read? Do you think that that was maybe an honest emotion for the first time out of her?
That's a great question. I think she was in shock. I think that was complete shock because she didn't expect that. She expected it to actually not be the death sentence because she's so narcissistic. She thought they would just vote life. She thought that she gave a good speech with her little slideshow and that would they fell for it because that's what her whole life has been based on. So when you see her put her hand on her cheek, that's shock. And then she covers her mouth like she can't believe what's being said because she's the tears are tears of relief. They're not tears of anger. They're not tears of joy. They're tears of relief. And in her little sick mind, she's thinking, you know, that's really great that they didn't vote me for the death sentence. You see, they really like me. Part of her narcissistic behavior is that everybody does what she says and they like her and they, you know, do her bidding. And I think this was just basically a shock to her.
Zumama, any more questions?
No, that's
is that
it.
Everything?
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Zumama. Dr. Glass, we have a lot of questions in our chat room, and
great.
I've noticed that the listeners are a lot smarter than I am by far, so I'm going to go to their questions. Do you think the defense will recall Alice LaViolette in the next round?
I think that's a big mistake because I don't think she did the – well, again, you know, again, that's all she had. They have, so they may very well do that. But it's she's going to be macerated again by Juan Martinez,
right.
and she doesn't come across very credible.
No, not at all. What does it mean when Jody takes that deep breath before or after she answers a question? She seems to do that a lot. Now that's very interesting. Does that tell us anything about her?
Yes. It says she must be in control. So she's trying to gather her thoughts, gather her lies, gather her manipulations, and that's what it's about. Because people don't answer like that. They answer quickly. They don't take the breath in before they speak unless they're trying to be in control. And she's very much in control. She's even in control of the words she uses and uses these $5 words, these really big vocabulary words. And a lot of times she doesn't even know the meaning of the words she uses.
Right.
Just to show
do you
off.
Do you ever do jury selection, Dr. Glass?
Yes, I do.
You
I
do.
Have done it, and I do that. Mm-hmm.
And
fact,
is that something you enjoy?
Next week
or,
I'll be going to the to a trial consultants conference.
Really? Yes. Now, that's interesting to me because some people say that the in fact, in the movie Runaway Jury, there's a great line that Gene Hackman says, and it's something along the lines of the decision has already been made as soon as the jury is picked. In other words, they know how the jury is going to vote. When you do a jury selection, what do you look for? I mean, give us
well,
kind of a rundown
of how
it works.
The fact that they can speak English. That's the first thing.
Yeah.
They understand the language. And you'd be surprised how many people come to jury and they don't speak the language or they don't know
I believe it.
The situation. So that's number one. It depends on what the situation is. If it's, I do various things with people. There's it depends on the crime. Depends on the situation, whether it's a civil case, whether it's a criminal case, and what the crime is. I did one that was a sexual abuse case, and it was very interesting that most of the people in the jury pool were molested themselves. So
wow.
It was very, very difficult to pick a jury, men and women.
Oh, yeah.
So
oh.
That was very, very hard to do.
Let's get back to Jody Arias for a moment, and I'm going to go to Katie Cool-Lady here in just a minute because she is really enjoys you, as we all do. Mm-hmm. And I know she does have some questions for you, if that's okay. But first, if you had Jody Arias in your office with you, in your room. How would you treat her? What would you do?
First of all, I'm in a position in my life where unless I really believe in the person's innocence, I really believe in the person, I won't take the case. So I don't have to be, worried about, oh, I need this, it's a job. I won't do that because I have to live with
But
myself.
I mean, if, let's just say in another universe.
In the universe.
But you were forced to.
First of all, I would not have her wear, if I was, and one of the things I also do besides jury selection is I do witness preparation. And I think she's been prepared completely wrong. Completely wrong. I think you need to see what you're going to get. I mean, one of the things, I mean, so you're saying if I was in, I was doing something to help Jody. Is that what
you're saying? To help her. What would you do if there's anything to help her? Right.
First of all, people would see through her sociopathic demeanor. So it would be a lot of work to get her to inflect her voice pattern, to make her sound like a normal, genuine person. That would be a lot of time and effort. So that's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, Jody is very, very, whether you think she's attractive or not, when she puts on a little lip gloss, a little makeup, a little mascara, doesn't have her hair all greasy, she's very attractive. I would play on that attractiveness.
Right.
I would play on that attractiveness because studies show, it's not my doing, it's research for the past 30 years have shown that people judge you differently when you look better in terms of being a juror. The juries judge you differently. So I would play that up and not lose those dowdy glasses and the dowdy clothes and things of that nature because you really want to, you know, that it was clear that the jury foreman was a little smitten with her. And that played in. So that's number one. Number two, I should say. I would also have her stick to the truth. I mean, I would really push that with her. I wouldn't get into the lies, the physical views. If after I heard her speak, I would say, cut that. That's not true. Talk to what is your truth. Maybe it is the emotional abuse. I would have her embellish that a lot more and get over the physical, the lies that people see through. So I would really bust her on what she was doing. And then she would get, you know, a fair trial, so to speak. I think that that's very important. But just for your listeners to hear and for everybody, I really would not take on a sociopath or someone like her because, you know, I would see right through it, and I don't want to waste my time or my energy or my sleep working with people.
Exactly.
Like that.
And that's absolutely, everybody knows that, Dr. Glass. You have way too much character in class to take on somebody like that, that's for sure. And I want to point out, Dr. Glass, when we had you on the show earlier, and you were talking about the jury, this was while the trial was going on, you used the word smitten, and you said, I wouldn't be surprised if there was something to the effect of if there was a man on the jury that was smitten with her, and you were absolutely, it was a foreman, it was the guy in charge.
He really liked her. I mean, you could tell the way he was talking about her. And as I said, even though we may not agree with what he said, we have to listen to that. And if I was, the defense, and that's another thing, you know, she's got some attorneys who are not really on her side. I mean, they could care less.
That's the question, right? They're like, what is the, a lot of people want to know, what about the defense attorney's body language? What are they saying?
They're terrible. Nurmi, you know, she might as well be a piece of wood. He can't stand her. He can't even look at her. And now, where she used to always answer questions for her, Jennifer Wilmot, she won't even go near Jody. I mean, she just won't even look at her. She won't even talk to her. So this is a very, very serious thing because a jury sees that. One of the things you often see in a criminal trial, especially, the attorney will put their arm around the defendant or they'll joke with them or they'll make it like they're human, like they're likable. And that oftentimes can translate to the juror. So when the juror is seeing that their own attorney hates them, they start hating them too.
Wow, that's interesting because I think toward the end, most people could see that her defense attorneys were just fed up and absolutely sick and tired of her.
Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of it had to do with the fact that they told her not to speak, do not talk to the press,
yes.
And there she did. So she defies them at every step of the way. And also,
exactly.
You know, how she came across on the jury, you know, to the jury. But also, you know, even though we're deeming Juan Martinez as a hero, he's not a hero to the jurors.
Mm-hmm.
And he needs to tone it
right.
down. And you can ask the same questions in a different tone of voice. You can be respectful and not try to be a old-time Perry Mason or one of these old-time, attorneys that get to the point, you know. That's
right.
That's not how it works. So that's really important to consider.
And also about Juan Martinez, at the very beginning, the first time I heard him, he made me feel uncomfortable, Dr. Glass.
Well,
I didn't want to watch him.
No,
and
because,
I like him.
You know,
I really like him, but...
People are saying so many positive things, but he's not personable and not likable.
Mm-hmm.
And that that says a lot. You know, again, we saw this in the Casey Anthony trial with, Jose Baez, that people, at least the juries, they found him more likable than the other, than the
Jeff
prosecution.
Ashton, yeah.
Jeff Ashton, yeah.
Exactly.
So they saw it. And so that really does mean something. But we also see another thing, too, is that... you know, the defense, because he was so harsh, maybe based on what the jury foreman said, they need to discuss that with the jury when they talk about their, you know, final arguments. You know, are the prosecutor has been really harsh. They need to bring that up if they want to do right by Jody. They also need to be a lot more compassionate to her. And, you know, physically, you know, whether it's an act or not, they need to show that she's a human being. Again, I hate to say these things because, you know, a part of me hopes that, you know, she gets what she deserves.
Right.
But again, you know, it doesn't matter at this point if she gets life or death. And also she needs to shut up and not give a little song and dance about, you know, why she should have life. Because people, you know, even when I first heard the fact that she would do all the prison programs and she would do all these things and that's why she should live, my thought was, really? Are they going to allow her to do that? And then I came to find out that no way, there's no program like this, that she's definitely not going to be allowed to do that. And I think that must have gone right through the jury's mind. And her lawyers needed to have known this, and they need to have set her straight and tell her that's it. And if she wants to plead death, I don't know if you're allowed to do that, but she just should say nothing and sit down. But that will be impossible because she needs an audience. She's so hungry for this attention.
She can't sit down. She can't sit down.
She has to speak. And also talking about, you know, here's another thing if they want to do well by her. You know, she just contradicted herself by showing all those beautiful pictures of her parents and her family and everybody all looking cuddly and cozy. Well, even if she was abused, it doesn't look that way in the photographs. And so it's a double message. So in order to rectify that, perhaps the defense needs to say, you know, here she is looking all good, but deep down inside, you know, she may have been suffering pain, or she's forgiven her parents and she doesn't want them to go through more pain, so don't kill her, this type of thing. But I think not killing her would be worse for her than killing her at this point, because
it probably would be.
Is described, you know, that's going to be, at least she'll have 12 years of life to deal with the agony, as opposed to, who knows, 30, 40 years. So, you know, and one of the things it said, the deputy warden said in his video, is that many women in that facility, that situation, that are facing what Jody faced, end up doing themselves in and killing themselves. So she may commit, you know, cancel her own life because she really doesn't want to live anymore.
Exactly. And also, the where she's going is actually death row anyway, because that's where they need to put her because of space, from what I understand. But what I understand is they've built this huge section, and they only have two women in it, and it's for death row inmates. So they're putting her in a death row cell anyway for a while. I don't know for how long, but that's where she would go for quite a while for her sentence
would be. I think I heard somewhere it would be for 5 years.
Yeah, maybe it was 5 years. Right. And so, you know, she's going to death row no matter what they say, at least for a while, and she'll get a horrible taste of what her life will be like. We're talking with world-renowned body language expert Dr. Lillian Glass. You have got to buy this book. It's called The Body Language Advantage. And Dr. Glass, we have a question from Katie Cool Lady. Katie, okay. I'll let you talk to Dr. Glass. I know you probably have about 20 questions. So pick a few and go for it.
Am I on?
Yes.
You're on, my darling. You're on.
Hi, Dr. Glass.
Hi there.
I'm so psyched. I can't believe I missed your blogs before. I'm glad you reminded me of those because I'll be reading those later this evening. I have about 20 million questions for you. But I'm going to go back to Jody and those interviews that she did after the verdict came in.
Uh-huh.
And her sense of calm is so creepy to me. And it leaves me feeling like the question I want to ask is, does she think she's going to somehow pull this out and get out of prison? Is she in that level of denial?
Absolutely. Absolutely. She is a lot of feelings of entitlement. She thinks she's going to somehow beat the system, somehow, some way. And you see this in her measured speech, her hyper-articulation. But where you saw her at her most real is when Ryan Owen from ABC News really let her have it and said, you know, why do you keep speaking? And just, you know, why do you talk? And just really, and he said, oh, are you still going to stick by that story about, you know, being abused? And, whoa, you just saw a different Jody come out. So you saw the little tigress.
Do you think it's like, ever going to hit her? I mean, obviously she's going to land in prison. She's going to land in maximum security either way. But, I mean, what psychologically, do you think it's going to hit her, like, when that door slams behind her, or if it's ever going to hit her?
Well, it's going to hit her after a while. She'll be in denial. Again, she's still in denial. She still thinks it's all fairies and roses and sunshine, and that she's going to be with other women, and she'll have forged some nice relationships and friendships, and everything will be fine, and she'll get what she wants. She'll have all that fan mail that she has in jail. She'll spend her time writing a book, selling pictures. She's got it all planned in her mind. So she's just fine. She'll have boyfriends on the outside that'll just really be hoping that she'll get out and she'll marry them and all this fantasy romance going on in letters. So she thinks everything will be fine with her, that she's just going to be, she's going to be locked up. But when the door slams and there's nobody to talk to, and she's only allowed a certain amount of letters, and she can only have 2 books a month, and the books are not up to date or not interesting, and only if the people who handle her have time to take her to the prison library, can she do anything? So you're really, or read anything. So she's going to be looking at four walls all the time, and this may create more psychological damage than anything for her.
Wow. Katie, do you have any more questions? If you do, we have a little time. Dr. Glass, can you stay with us a little bit?
Yeah, I'd love it.
Okay, great. And then we do have other questions, but Katie, go ahead. We'll let you have one more, and then we have to stop you.
Oh, I have two, but I'll pick the one.
Ask two.
Well,
we'll give you another one.
Well, you can have two. You can have two.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So did you see the Daryl Brewer, I call it his testimony via interview. Did you see that?
Excuse me. I don't recall that.
Daryl Brewer is the one that was her ex-boyfriend that was supposed to testify in the vacation phase.
Right. Where they didn't show his face?
Yeah, they didn't show his face, but they sure did on this interview.
No, I didn't see that one.
Okay. Oh, I'll send you that link so you can. I'm just would have been curious about your evaluation of. It was really bizarre. And anyway, I was
curious
about that.
How did you think it was bizarre?
He's very nervous. His mouth was so dry. It seemed like he was not being spontaneous. It seemed like it was scripted, and he was just sort of singing Jody's praises about how. Basically, the defense's party line that she was this wonderful person. There were no problems with her ever until she ran into PPL and the Mormon religion and Travis Alexander. And then she flipped and morphed into a person that he
You know, it may very well be the truth. It may very well be the truth. There are certain people that are toxic to other people, that bring out the worst in them. And that's one of the things that the jury foreman said. He said she didn't have these problems before she met Travis. So, you know, just after she met Travis, her whole life, you know, unfurled. And so, you know, there may be something to that. There may not. But that is a possibility.
Well, I'll get that video to you, so maybe
yeah,
we can
that'd be interesting.
Get you on that another time. And my second question is, if you, knowing what we know now about this jury and this foreperson, what would your priorities be in selecting a jury for this next phase?
Well, if I was with the prosecution, I would pick a different jury than I would if I was with the defense. With the defense, you want to get a lot more men that, you know, may be sympathetic to her cause, especially when she's talking about the whole sexual thing. Some men find that appealing, very appealing, and, you know, that may work in her favor. So, you know, but if I would, which I would never do the defense, as I spoke earlier, but for the prosecution, I guess I would just have to, you really want to find jurors that don't have a problem with the death penalty, and that is going to be difficult, because a lot of people do.
And thank you, Katie.
If they say they don't have a problem with it, like this, these jurors were all death qualified, but it could be sort of lurking under the surface.
Oh yeah, and you don't know what they're going to do when they get on there, and you have to ask deeper questions than do you believe in the death penalty? Because you have to ask certain type of questions. If you knew that, you know, you would be responsible, do you think you could live with yourself? That type of thing. Because you know, I remember, as I said, the case that I was sharing earlier with Tricia is that a woman swore up and down that even though she was sexually molested, it wouldn't affect her. Well, right as she was walking to the jury box, she was crying. So I knew this was a dead man walking. And the fellow got 3 life sentences because of that.
Wow.
And he was not, Katie,
thank
in my
you
mind,
so,
guilty.
Thank you so much, Katie. Hang on, because we're going to come back to you a little later in the show, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you. Don't hang up, Katie. Don't you dare hang up. I'll be so angry if you're not there.
I'm not.
Okay.
I'll hang up.
Thank you.
I'll put you on hold so you can listen, okay, Katie?
Great.
Okay.
Okay, hang on. And Dr. Glass, we're going to go to one of our favorite people, Michael in Minnesota. He has a question for you. Michael,
hi, Michael,
you're on with
Minnesota.
Dr. Lillian Glass.
That's where
hi.
I got my doctorate
Dr.
in Minnesota.
Lillian Glass, my pleasure and honor to speak with you.
Oh, an honor. That's where I got my doctorate in Minnesota.
I happened to catch that. I read your Wikipedia page, and when I saw that, I thought, aha, she won't
hey.
Make fun of my accent.
I know, I do. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you betcha.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, from the moment Jody Arias took the stand, did you happen to see the very first question when Nurmi asked her, did you kill Travis Alexander? And she said, yes, I did. And he said, why? And she said, because he attacked me. Pause. Whoops, I forgot to say, and I defended myself. And from that moment on, I mean, I that just seemed so disingenuous to me.
Of course.
I from there on, I didn't believe a word out of her mouth.
No, and you can't, because you're dealing with a liar, a pathological liar, a sociopath, and you're dealing with somebody who has her own agenda there. And had she said she was mentally and emotionally abused, that's a whole different story, because that could be very well the case. But the physical abuse and the attack, that's ridiculous.
Completely ridiculous. But what I didn't understand how the jurors didn't have the same reaction as me to that very first utterance out of her mouth.
Well, I think they did, but many of them got side, the ones that certainly thought she should live, were looking at different situations. And again, I just also want to say that even though people voted for her not to have the death penalty, they may have felt that life would be worse than death for her. So, you know, the thing is, they need to be interviewed in terms of asking, what did you mean by giving her life? Did you mean that it would be a worse punishment, that she'd have to live with herself? Because death may have been too easy for her in their estimation. So again, She's dead either way, as one of the jurors said.
Okay. Well, another thing I just have to... You were talking with Katie Cool Lady about Daryl Brewer. And
yes.
Possibly she was normal with him. And I think she does kind of take on the personality or neurosis,
yes,
or whatever normalcy of the person she's with.
You know, you're so right. You,
yeah,
you said something right now that's brilliant. Yes.
Because I think he is a fairly stable, nice guy. I was with Katie. He was obviously nervous, but I don't know that there was anything malicious behind it. I just don't want to even go there because I'm not you. But she did have the same behaviors with her previous boyfriends of suspicion and sneaking and breaking into emails and confronting girlfriends or other women. And so it wasn't – these symptoms were displayed, and I guess the jury foreman missed that part of testimony, but anyway, I think he got it so wrong, and I'm really disappointed in him. But
yeah,
anyway,
that's all I have. No, you said something really brilliant, and I really like that you said that she does take on the personality. In fact, what I term it is she has an adhesive personality. She adheres to the person she's with. I mean, she became a Mormon for Travis. She did what Travis did. One of the things that was on 48 Hours when they interviewed her, they said, why were you smiling during your mugshot? And she said, well, that's what Travis would do. So, again, she idealizes the person. You saw her idealize Wilmot, her female attorney, where she would dress like her. She started behaving like her. They were doing things in sync. When Wilmot was writing, Jody was writing. Jody was looking at pages. She was looking at pages. So it was very interesting. She was dressing in the same colors and the same type of attire that Wilmot was. So that was fascinating. And then you also saw that she did this, you know, just even recently when she was with, I guess, the mitigator, there was a woman in the gray dress, and they had the same hairstyle, except Jody had it in a ponytail and the other one had it pulled back. But it was, they had a side view of them in one of the internet photographs, and it was fascinating to see how alike they look. So she does have this adhesive personality where she adheres to the person she's with.
Even her artwork isn't original.
No, not at all.
It's just tragic. She drives
me
crazy.
She is tragic, and it's really, really sad. And
Michael? Oh, go ahead, Dr. Glass.
No, and just very manipulative, very manipulative.
Yes. Absolutely. Michael, is that everything, my dear?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for calling.
I'll put you back on hold
you.
So you can listen.
Okay,
thank you, Michael. Thanks for calling in. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Dr. Glass, we only have about 12 million more questions. I'll try and narrow them down here if I can. Did you see when they announced the first-degree murder conviction, that she was guilty of first-degree murder, did you see Jody? Did you see that at that moment?
She took a breath. Mm-hmm. She was shocked. She could not believe. She thought she would be getting off. She thought she would be going home and starting a new life. She had no clue that this was
She really did. Wow.
There was no clue. She was in absolute shock. She looked like she was going to tear up. She couldn't believe that the jury did this to her. And she even admitted it, that she thought that they betrayed her. She was completely convinced that they were on her side, that they bought it. She was looking at the jury, and she looked ridiculous as she answered the questions and looked at the jury and looked at the, you know, and answered the question, looked at the jury. That's not how it's done. It's very disingenuous. But that she thought she was doing everything right, and how dare them do this to her?
That is just fascinating. It's just so hard to believe that, I mean, not hard to believe, but it just shows how deeply affected Jody is to even think that she had a chance of getting off. It's just amazing.
Did
you see Jody's mom at all?
Yes.
And if you did, what is your interpretation of her actions?
I think the mom is ambivalent. I think in a way she feels that she has to be there as the mother to support the daughter, but I don't think she likes her. I mean, you saw it through the trial. She was stone cold. I think that conflict and that relationship is in large part why Jody's the way she is.
Yes, I do too.
I think you always have to look at the home first to see what happened in the early years of somebody when they grow up to be a Jody Arias.
The mother doesn't like her, you know. The mother doesn't respond well to her.
And also, it was such
a bunch of nonsense when she said the reason she wanted to live was because of those people. And she pointed to them so mechanically, without love, without affection. It was very rote. It was very mechanical. So there was no love there. She would not hurt them if she died. And when she said her cousin convinced her, her cousin wasn't even in the courtroom enough to have that type of effect on her. And her cousin gave her some wrong information as to why she should live. If Jody wants to die, she needs to be quiet and, you know, go out peacefully.
Yeah, well, Jody Arias will never be quiet as long as she has a tongue and is able to use it in a voice box. Also, did you notice when Jody's mom and aunt were laughing while they were showing Travis Alexander's autopsy photos? They weren't laughing at the photos, but they just weren't paying attention.
Because they don't care. They don't care. They don't really care about her. She may have been offered a book deal. She was scribbling a lot of notes, the mother. This may have be her just reward for Jody. Jody was not the ideal daughter. She wasn't calling home a lot. In fact, she even admitted in her little final statement that she oftentimes lost sight of how important family was. And these people don't respond to her. I mean, she's probably given them a real hard time, and you could tell, like, moving out at such a young age and doing things that that were just abhorrent to them.
Dr. Glass, this may be a bit difficult to answer, and I'm asking you to just give us your best theory, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen enough of Jody to get a good idea how twisted she is.
Mm-hmm.
How does somebody become like that? The argument, it's the brain, it's the environment, it's the brain. I don't know. What is your thought on that?
It's called multifactorial. That means it's many factors. And it means that she probably does have some genes that are a little defective. I mean, you saw how sociopaths think, and a lot of her thinking is very similar to what a sociopath does with these illogical thought processing that goes on. When you ask her a question, she doesn't answer it the first time, but if you rephrase it, she'll answer it correctly another time. So, you know, this shows you her level of thinking and her thought process that may not be normal. She doesn't come across very normal. And then, of course, there's what happens to her in her environment. There are a lot of people that are born with quote-unquote evil genes, so to speak, but they don't act on them because in their environment it's either been loving or non-threatening and it's been okay, so they're able to function properly. But the environment, obviously, the lovingness of the mother didn't seem to be there. She had such difficulty, her seeking out men at a very young age and moving in with them and leaving her family and the lack of education that she's had. I mean, she's not really used her mental capacities or gone to school, feathered herself. And, you know, she's worked as a waitress. Nothing wrong with being a waitress. But, you know, with how she tries to portray herself, that you would think that she would, you know, become a teacher or something that required an education. And,
exactly.
You see that, and just her hunger and her adapting to other people's lives so she could become a part of them speaks volume. So I think it's a little bit of the genetics and a little bit of the environment, and put it all together, and there you have a Jody Arias who is dangerous, maybe not to the general public, but she is certainly dangerous to anyone that doesn't do anything her way.
Boy, isn't that the truth? And she's a frightening human being.
And again, I don't want us to look at Travis, you know, even though, you know, we feel horribly in terms of what happened to him and he didn't deserve it, but he was no angel here, you know? I mean, the fact that he invited her or kept inviting her back in or allowing her back into his life was not acceptable.
The
puppy.
Uh-oh. Somebody.
Okay.
There, you got a very,
it's
very
okay,
good bark out there.
Little Annabella heard something.
Oh, it's nice to have some.
It's nice to have someone on your side.
No, that's
know.
Little. Yeah, she's on my side. She's 9 months
wow.
old, and she's precious as can be, and she's my little protector here. So there would be
what kind of,
there would be no Jody, Ella, Jody
no.
Arias is around here with little
would,
Annabella.
No one would be able to sneak in your house and make cookies,
no.
that's for sure. Let's go to Fern on the phone. Fern, do you have a question for Dr. Lillian Glass?
Yes, actually, now I have two questions. I thought
sure.
I only had one. The first one is, the fact that the foreman was discussing his perception that Jody was verbally and mentally abused by Travis in the mitigation stage of this trial, that was inappropriate. That was not part of it. That had nothing to do with it.
Right.
And
right, that it's true, but again, you know, everything came out at this point.
Right, but here's the other deal. When you're talking about Daryl Brewer, I disagree. I think there is something else going on with Daryl Brewer. Let's not forget he was 20 years older than her. He got demoted at his job. They bought this house together with no money down.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't afford the rent with whatever was going on. I think there's more to the story than meets the eye.
There may very
also,
well do. There may very well be. I don't know that much about it. I didn't look at the tape. I didn't really know. But again,
I think that's why he was not called up during the mitigation phase. Forget the girlfriend with the drug problem and being on Nancy Grace and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't call him up because it was clear that Juan Martinez had something on him. In
there
my opinion.
Could have been.
As an attorney, and I disagree with I disagree with you about Juan Martinez's style. Yes, it is aggressive, but
uh-huh.
he has a role to play, and his role to play is to be the voice of the victim, and he represents.
No, I agree with that. It's just his tone of voice was very aggressive. His tone was hostile. It obviously upset a juror enough to give her life as opposed to death. So what we're saying is that if it had that effect on four people, that means it wasn't working.
Well,
so
we,
you
we
may thought,
know that
have thought it was effective. I may have thought it was effective. I'm sorry?
We don't know that the four people thought he was too aggressive.
Well, again, it was talked about by the jury foreman. So we know that about the jury foreman. Even if it's one person that has this issue. I mean, that's one
back
person
to her
too
mother.
Many.
No question her mother's writing a book. There was no question.
Yeah, there was absolutely no question about that. But again, when you see somebody in a position where they're that aggressive, aggression usually doesn't work. In fact, that's one of the things attorneys work on, you know, especially if they get emotionally involved in a case or they're trying to make a point. They do work on coming across because juries don't like it oftentimes. They don't like it. They like the logical
okay.
thinking.
I'm sorry. Please continue. I always interrupt. I swear.
No. They like logical thinking. They like an approach. And again, he could have done the same thing, but it's the tone of voice that he used, not letting
exactly.
her finish sentences. So that's what we're talking about.
Thank you, Fran. Thank you very much for your call and your questions. And I think you're going to see that with Juan Martinez. Or people are going to say he was fine. He was fighting for the victim.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all agree to that. But you know, I like him. I would love to have him on the show. I love what he does. I love what he stands for.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought he was rude, and he didn't need to be rude.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't help. It didn't help. You know,
no,
I want
and that's
to
what you have to be.
It.
You know, you always have to be respectful. And
mm-hmm.
that's maybe some people were turned off with him. And they say some people liked him again. But it's better to go the other way.
Well, exactly. You won't. Right. You will not offend anybody if you give just a basic respect and courtesy to somebody on the stand. That won't be offensive, but I think you
no.
run the risk
mm-hmm.
of being offensive when you put words in people's mouths and try and make them look stupid for no good reason. You know, the
yeah,
things
arrogance
that he
and aggression
on,
don't work, and we saw that with Jeff Ashton.
Exactly. Another question is Jody able to remember everything about the killing, and she's obviously
of
just
course.
Lying about
of
having these blanks.
Can.
Does she remember every detail?
Yes, she remembers everything. She remembers that she was enjoying it when she was doing it. She
really?
Hated this man. I mean, this man was going away with another woman. She snapped. She went off on him. Her
mm-hmm.
rage came out. We saw that little glimpse of rage with the reporter. So just magnify
yes,
that 1,000 times, and there you have what happened with Travis.
And she will never really tell the truth about that.
Never.
Will she?
That's what she did. That's she's a liar. That, no, absolutely
mm-hmm.
not. She's a sociopath. She tries to be charming. She tries to be, you know, very sweet. Whenever your listeners really should be aware of this. Whenever you hear a really sweet, sickening voice like that, run, run, because there's something wrong with that person.
Well, that is true. You've given that advice to me once before, and I remember
I'll
that.
I'll give it to you again, and again,
I will,
and again.
Just keep telling us, because I will. We've got to pound that into people, and boy, I remember that. That's the one thing. If I take it to my grave, it will be that, because that is so important.
Remember that, because you can save yourself so much grief in life
mm-hmm.
just by knowing when somebody's always sweet and sickening like that. And they have that mellifluous tone, but they don't get upset.
Mm-hmm.
They're very kind and measured. Run! And don't let your feet stop.
That's right. Remember the story of Jody's mom that Jody told to the jury when she was begging for her life, that Jody's mom was pulled up to a stoplight and she turned and she saw Travis's family there. Did you hear that story?
No, tell us.
Oh, yeah, it was just this, I had a weird connection. It was just, she was telling the jury that her mother pulled up to a stoplight and turned over and saw Travis's family, you know, the sisters and brothers in there in the car. And she realized then that, you know, they would never be able to see Travis again.
Oh.
And her mom, when she told that, when her mother was telling her this, they both went silent, and they were thinking about how the brothers and sisters will never be able to see Travis again. And that was it. Do you think that was a bullshit story?
Yes.
With the mom,
it was
nonsense. Really?
Again, anything for high drama, anything to get attention, anything to
mm-hmm.
get people to listen to her. Again, this woman has nothing to offer. She is loving this attention. She is loving making up stories and letting people be on the seat of their chair and listen to this. She's just excited as can be about this. This is what fuels her. But she's going to have a real rude awakening when she goes into her prison cell and there's nobody to talk to but herself.
That's going to be very interesting. We have a great question from Shirley. I don't know if you saw this, Dr. Glass, but some people say that Jody made a slashing motion across her throat at Juan. Did you see any of that at all? And do you think
I didn't see that, but I did see she did put her hand on her throat, and that was a vulnerability aspect where she felt really vulnerable. Well, when people, your throat is where you breathe, it's where you eat, it's where you take life. And so again,
mm-hmm.
on her throat, when she put her hand on her throat, that oftentimes means the person's feeling very weak and vulnerable. But I don't
Got
think
it.
She would have done a slashing of vicious, because that's not her nature. The viciousness
mm-hmm.
comes out in other ways.
And we have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Dr. Yeah. Like I said, I just
no,
have
no,
a
no,
really
no. Just,
good
go ahead.
Quality
go ahead.
To interrupt.
No,
Ro, we're going to Ro on the phone. Ro, do you have a question for Dr. Glass?
Hi, Ro.
Yeah. Hi. First time listener, and I'm enjoying the show.
Oh, great.
Thank
just,
you.
Dr. Glass, I just wanted to comment on a comment you made a couple minutes ago about Travis. Why would he invite her back, and why would he continue the relationship?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've kind of gotten hooked on this trial, sad to say, started midstream, and it seems that she would come through the doggy door. She would try to sneak in, you know, many ways. In fact, Dana, his past girlfriend commented that one time when she was supposed to watch the dog, she used the key to get in
mm-hmm.
when Travis was out of town and Jody was there having baked cookies.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we can't assume that he always invited her back.
Not always, but the fact that they were having sex speaks volumes. The fact that his
mm-hmm.
last experience with Jody was at her home having sex, or at his home having sex with her, says a lot. And that, you know, he could have called the police. He could have told her to leave. He could have said, look, this is over. He could have been more firm with her.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, we're not trying to say anything negative about the dead and making him wrong. But, again, it takes two to tango. And what was he, you know, she may have done all of these things, as you said, but in her mind, she thought that she still had some hope with him because he left the door open a little bit.
I agree with you, but as far as the having sex on that last, his last day, that none of that is substantiated. I mean,
well, you saw it with the photographs. You saw it with the photographs. They're naked photographs, and then he took a chair, he took a shower. So it's kind of a logical progression of what
was going
on.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. But,
yeah,
you know,
so it was definitely
the
fact that they were having sex.
I have children that age, not boys, girls, and, you know, I don't know. I mean, she was obviously very free and very innovative. And
right, but
you know,
you're a different type of mother. You're a mother that didn't give her a cold upbringing or double messages, give your children guidance. You obviously are sensitive enough to be involved in caring what goes on, not only with this case but with your own children. You don't know if she had that same relationship with her own mother. So,
I know, but I mean, I'm sure she used her sexual prowess as a lure to him.
Of course.
And, you know, I don't want to be sexist, but to most men, that would be hard to pass up.
Right.
Exactly,
but if the woman
bro,
was a
exactly.
sociopath or a danger to him or he really wanted out, many times he wouldn't be as sexually excited to see a person like that. And it may affect him there, but there was some major attraction that he had towards Jody. So
yes,
again, when a lot of men, you know, I've seen a lot of men in my as clients in my practice, and I've, you know, when they're done with a woman, she could be standing there naked and doing all kinds of things, and he's not interested. It's over.
That's exactly right, Dr. Glass. I feel like Travis had a good angel and a bad angel on his shoulder whispering, and sometimes
the
bad angel won.
He was a Mormon, you know, he was swearing by this religion. He was writing in journals. He was so much the Mormon, and yet he was doing things that were very un-Mormonly and very much against their doctrine.
When they were showing the autopsy photos, Dr. Glass, do you think Jody was reliving it and getting excited about it again?
I don't know if she's getting excited. I think she was shocked. She was appalled. I think she was excited when she was doing it, when she was probably killing him and giving him, that's what you get. That's what you get for doing
right.
or whatever. And I think seeing it in the reality probably threw her a little bit because she didn't expect for anybody to find those pictures. She didn't expect
right.
to put that in the washing machine. There's no way. She, you know, she thinks she's smarter than everybody, so she can't believe she got busted. So that's what she was upset about, that she got busted more than
anything. And I don't know if you know this, but she flipped the bird to supposedly to Nancy Grace. Everybody thought that she was showing her middle finger to Juan.
She wouldn't be the first one to do that.
Well, that I think Nancy has seen probably a lot of middle fingers, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know if it was to, you know, again.
Well, that's what she said. That's what she said. She said it was to you, Nancy, and it was Nancy Grace.
Right. Well, you know, again, that's her passive-aggressive way of getting back. That's her
her
power. You know, it's like, see, I have the last word. So, you know, that's meaningless in the scheme of things. But,
exactly.
You know, it's...
What do you think, and I know you have to go. You've been so gracious to stay. You've stayed a lot longer than I told you it would be, so thank you.
No, I love it.
We're talking with Dr. Good. We're talking with Dr. Lillian Glass, the world-renowned body language expert. Dr. Glass, coming up is going to be another trial, not she's guilty, but it's going to be the penalty phase.
Right.
What do you expect we'll see from Jody? Can you just maybe visualize what she might do that might maybe even surprise us?
Well, I don't know what she will do. I just think her attorneys need to get a hold of her and start, you know, doing their best for her because that's what they're supposed to do. Not that, you know, again, it doesn't matter if she gets life or death at this point because, you know, her life is going to be death and she's going to welcome death and her death is going to be life. So it doesn't make a difference.
Right.
But I just think instead of, you know, wasting more time and putting on a show, I think they shouldn't let her speak. She may fight them, and but I don't think that's going to be a good idea. Just like the jury foreman said, it may hurt her. And I think that the prosecution needs to be a little less aggressive with her and let her dig her own grave, so to speak, and speak her lack of truth that people can see through. And I think that she needs to, you know, just for her own benefit, I think they need to let her get those rid of those glasses and stop this dowdy fake look. Because even though, you know, they've seen pictures of her with the mantra, and they know that this look is fake, and that's not helping her.
One more question, and then we will wrap it up, I promise.
Sure.
And a lot of people in the chat room are excited about this question, because do you think Jody was yelling at Travis while she was stabbing him, like, you deserve this, you bastard? Or do you think she was just silent?
Oh, no, I think she was just letting him have it. I think every part of her, I think she was yelling at him. I think every part of her, because her rage, you know, you deal with these sweet voices and these, you know, real goody kind of, oh, I'm just so sweet, I never would do anything wrong. And then all of a sudden, it's in a silent but deadly erupting volcano, and everything comes out. Every guttural sound, every scream, every emotion, every yell. I mean, how do you, you need the physical energy to stab someone 27 times. You need to have what's called subglottic pressure. So she's taking that breath in and letting it out and pushing it out and yelling, and every pressure that she says vocally helps her physically to get that knife in him.
Wow, that's just, it's a very creepy and awful thought to think of. And unfortunately, I'm sure Travis Alexander's family has thought about that scenario quite a bit, and it's just so, so tragic. Dr. Glass, give us the name of your book again.
It's
Tell us your website.
It's The Body Language Advantage, and also in October, we have a new book out called The Body Language of Liars. So that should be exciting.
You'll have to go on the show. And we'll give you 3 hours, and we'll just talk about it. Oh, that'd be great. And what is your website, please?
It's www.drlillianglass.com.
Great. Dr. Glass, I can't thank you enough.
You're wonderful, Trish, and I love being on your show.
Thank you, and we'll talk again very soon, okay?
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Oh, I love that woman. She is the absolute best. Okay, Katie, cool lady. Oh, thank you for holding, my dear. I kept you waiting a full hour.
Are you there?
Are you on the line?
I'm on the line.
You're live and on the line. Katie, what did you think of Dr. Glass?
Well, you know, I always think all this body language stuff is really interesting. I don't like to doubt the experts, disagree with them. But there's some things I agree with and not everything. I'll just say that.
Sure. Well, that's fine. I'm sure she expects people to disagree. What do you disagree about?
I want to get on a little soapbox here. Because,
okay, go ahead.
You know, I have made a little avocation about studying sociopathy, you know, for my own reasons, which people can figure that out. And I have come to a conclusion that, you know, people like to do the postmortem literally on these relationships and these murders as if, and myself, the biggest one at the top of this list is if we can really truly understand them, therefore we can predict them, therefore we can protect ourselves from this kind of thing. And what happens in this inquiry sometimes is that the victim starts getting dissected. And if only they hadn't been this, if only they hadn't been there. And there are certain things that are, you know, valid to look at. The biggest thing of everything to consider is that sociopaths are in such another league of manipulation, and they so quickly, I mean, I'm not kidding you, they look at a person, they size up within seconds their vulnerabilities and immediately start exploiting them. So the person just has absolutely no idea what is hitting them, and actually what they feel with this person is comfortable. So they're starting to drop their defenses, which is totally the game with sociopaths. And it's really a very smart person, a very together and successful person, can still have certain holes in their being that a sociopath is going to see. Like they've got some sort of glasses and they can see it immediately slip right through those cracks and start working their evil magic on that person.
Mm-hmm.
And I just saw in our case, not just with my sister, but with all the people that came forward that they had manipulated, and these are savvy people from bankers, realtors, Jaguar car dealers, Rolex watch sellers that are used to dealing with high rollers and posers. And they fooled every last one of them to thinking that they were anything from, you know, professional tennis players to pilots to professional basketball players to international bankers. Like, people don't realize the level of manipulation that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So why Travis, I think, you know, when we sort of, you know, dissect the personality of Travis and start to, like, he could have done this or could have done that or whatever, and believe me, that's been done with my sister as well. What he had was a vulnerability to her that she kept pushing. She kept pushing that button over and over and over again with him. That even if his smarts knew better, even if he knew intellectually better, which he did, and how many of us have been in relationships that we know better, but we keep going back, or we keep kind of seeing that person on the side, even though our friends are telling us not to, and we feel embarrassed, so we don't tell anybody, we're sort of giving them a chance. And it's, but Travis was in another league with this and never for a second, I'm sure, thought that his life was in danger. But it was.
Right.
So I kind of want to let Travis off the hook. It feels like I'm also sort of letting my sister off the hook that's been, you know, characterized at times as being stupid or she should have known.
Katie, hold on. Hold on 1 second. I don't think there's anybody, and especially Dr. Glass, is putting any blame on the victims. They're just saying, hey, you know, this is what they did. If they hadn't done that, if they were just a little more careful, but they weren't. It's not a blame thing. It's just kind of more of a fact. You know what I mean? It's not saying they did something. An awareness, exactly. And that's something that Dr. Glass wants to do, is to make everybody aware of these sociopaths by doing my show, by doing other shows and writing books. She really wants to educate people and protect people. That's what I love about her. So, and it may seem like that people are attacking or even judging. They shouldn't. It's more of a statement of fact. I totally understand Travis. I'm sure he wanted to help Jody. He saw the good in her, just like he saw the good in everybody. And he would never in his wildest dreams think that she would actually kill him. And that's not his fault. She was good. She was that manipulative. She was that good. Am I right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, she's got Daryl Brewer, you know, totally bamboozled still. And this is part of the reason, I mean, she has to be really locked up for life, because she will continue and probably escalate. I mean, she had a gun in her car for a reason when she was arrested.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she might have gotten a taste of that, and, you know, she was ready to keep rolling with that. I mean, who knows?
Who do you think she was going after? I think she was going after Chris and Sky Hughes. I really do.
Yeah, I think she was probably going after anybody that she thought was going to, you know, make her vulnerable to getting arrested to this crime.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I think it was Chris and Sky, absolutely. After what they've said, I have no doubt that that is what she was doing. But you're very right, Katie Cool Lady, in that one thing you have to remember, the thing about the death penalty is, to me, society needs to be protected first and foremost. That is the top of the list. It doesn't matter about their childhood. It doesn't matter what happened. If they are a danger to society, they need to be removed from society. And if they are a danger to people, even in prison, they need to be removed, and the only possible way to do that is death. And it's the last resort, but hey, people deserve to be protected. And I'm getting on my soapbox here. It's a little crowded, Katie. Sorry, I've gained a little weight. But anyway, she will do this in prison. She will try and harm somebody in prison. To me, that's one of the reasons why she deserves the death penalty, because you're right. She will not stop.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you know, about the death penalty question, you know, I have had so many mixed feelings for that, because I have been walking, you know, the death penalty appeals process for so long, and I know what it does to families, you know, intimately acquainted with that. Well, I mean, my family didn't start getting tortured until the death penalty opponent attorneys got a hold of us, the appellate attorneys, and that's when they really started putting us through the ringer. So I know that, and I'm so on the fence with, I'm kind of like, I hate to say it, but I'm really okay with either option, because I'm ambivalent about it. But where I just keep landing, and it's an easy decision for me, is what does the family want? That's it. And if they want that, I'm behind them 100%. It makes it easier for me to deal with my cognitive dissonance about that. But really, you know, the worst-case scenario is she does end up life without parole. She will be in that death penalty environment, the exact same lifestyle she will be in for at least 3 years, I'm told. And, you know, that 3 years is a long time to be living like that. That will have an impact on her. And then, and only then will she be able to earn getting out of that. So, you know, that's the worst-case scenario right there if you know, the next jury does not decide for death. However, I talked with our wonderful poster AZ lawyer last night. I spent some time with her, and
she's the best.
She's awesome, and she was, you know, of course we're, you know, pulling the same part. And she said that in Arizona, since they started having that new process of running these sentencing hearings again, that there's been only 4 times in the state of Arizona that has happened, and 3 out of 4 they went for death. So the odds are
good.
With, and, you know, I don't know if anybody's been reading, but I had a really, really interesting conversation with her about just something that happened in the final arguments of this last mitigation hearing. And Juan Martinez said something that was very questionable, and then they brought it back to the jury the next day and did an instruction on that. But this AZ lawyer used to be, I don't know if she's still doing that exactly now, but she has for years been an appeals lawyer, where she's a researcher, where she's diving into these cases trying to find things for appeals for the death penalty. It's kind of interesting that she and I are friends in considering that, but she really is on the side of prosecution in this case. But she has that background. She really, really, really knows that. And she has spent a lot of time researching that particular thing that Juan Martinez said, and she said, honestly, I really think that would come up for appeal. And I really think the entire case, she said, that is the one thing that would have a likelihood of Jody Arias getting a full new trial on that.
Do you dare say what it was that he said?
Well, it's all that business about, he said something about, it's all legalese to me, but something about how Jody could be up for parole if they didn't.
Oh, that's right, yes, exactly. Could be up for. You're not supposed to suggest that. You're not even supposed to talk about it.
Exactly.
You know, from what I understand.
I've been hearing so many different things about that, that it was actually in the instruction. But anyway, I trust this AZ lawyer completely.
Mm-hmm.
And she really, really went into looking into this, and she said, I think there's a vulnerability with that, and if there's anything that could grant her a new trial, it would be that even if they had a re-instruction on that, the fact that it was ever said in a death penalty case, she had a big red flag on it. So to me, and she said the next time around, if he doesn't say that, that actually has been erased off the books now. So the one vulnerability of the entire trial is now getting a do-over. So I was feeling very heartened last night after speaking with her, because it's like, this seems like a silver lining I've been looking for.
Oh, boy. That is so scary to think that could really happen. But it could, you know, it really could. So we just have to be, anything is possible, as we know, Katie Cool Lady. Really quickly now, because I know you have to go, tell us how the Alexanders are doing. You spent some time with them after this very shocking hung jury on the penalty phase. How is Travis's family doing?
Well, I didn't actually see them, but I've had some communication with them.
Okay.
And since then, and, you know, there's a lot of different people that are handling it differently. And so I just think they're all dealing with it in the best ways that they can. Some, you know, understandably, were completely devastated by it.
Mm-hmm.
And some were stronger than the others. But, you know, they are ready to go with the next hearing. I do believe that. What I've heard back consistently is they're behind this, you know, going around again. They're glad to have some space to be able to regroup.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that was communicated to me is hoping that it won't take another 2 years to get back into this hearing.
Oh, my gosh. And that could happen, too. I've heard all kinds of things about how long it could take. I hope they go on July, is it 18th? I mean, please, we can't take it anymore. I can't imagine how the Alexanders must feel. Any thoughts on the possibility of it going that long, 2 years?
I don't think it'll go 2 years. I don't think Juan Martinez will let that. I don't think that even, you know, his boss would allow that to go that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they've already done it. So really, they do have to do some regrouping, I'm sure. But the majority of the back work has been done. The jury selection is going to be the tricky part, I think. So that might take
mm-hmm.
a little while. But as long as they get moving on this, you know, I think everybody will feel better as long as it, but I don't think there's any way that it's going to take 2 years. I doubt it'll be 2018. There's always continuances. So I don't think anybody should mark July 18th on their calendar and be buying plane tickets if they want to come out. I don't see that happening. But I don't think it's going to go 2 years. I mean, I don't have a prediction, but I don't think it's going to be that far out.
Let's hope so. Well, Katie, I'll tell you what, we'll be checking in with you periodically until the sentencing actually happens, because you're our eyes and ears on the ground there. But you have been so incredible for us on True Crime Radio and on WebSleuth.com. You've given us so much of yourself, your time, your energy, your thoughts. We couldn't have gone through this without you. You gave us a perspective that nobody else could have given us, and you've done it all from the goodness of your heart. So thank you very, very much. If something happens, we'll have you call in next week. If not, we'll just be talking to you very, very soon. Or you're always welcome to call in and comment on anything that we're doing on Tricia's True Crime Radio, okay?
Well, thank you so much, Tricia, and be seeing you around.
we'll be here. Just don't leave WebSleuth. You know, we got to have our Katie Cool Lady fix. Even if just you write in and tell us what you're making for dinner, we're happy, okay?
Okay.
Thanks, my dear. You take care now.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, Kimster, my darling, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. It's almost sad to hear, to say, kind
I
of
know.
Say goodbye to Katie, but she'll be back. Wait a minute. I don't want to say unfortunately either. I don't know. It's kind of
I know what you mean. It's like we wish we were saying goodbye forever for the Jodi Arias trial for Travis Alexander's family's sake, but we love having her on. So it's a you know, double-edged sword here. We don't want her on because we want the trial to be over, but we do want her on because we love her so much. And speaking of love, Kimster, I have nothing but love for you and airtime, because it's now time for the Web Sleuth Hot Cold Case of the Week. Take it away, Kimster.
Well, first of all, this is per chat room. Because, hi, Tricia. It's so good to talk to you. I'm so happy to
Don't
be
give
here.
Me that voice.
You're so
you give me that voice.
Sweet.
I'm running. No, I'm telling you, that's the best advice Dr. Lillian Glass can give everybody. Run when you hear somebody that sounds like Jodi Arias, and run fast. You don't have that voice, Kim. So your voice is very beautiful, husky, and a mature, sexy woman who's smart. That's what you sound like.
Oh, my goodness gracious. And, hey, all you guys out there, I'm single.
There you go. And single to boot. Go for it, my dear.
Thank you, Trisha. That's really sickening sweet of you. No, very sweet of you. Thank you.
It's sickening sweet, but that's okay.
Before we get started, I wanted to talk to those of you who might have been able to come up for some air after the Arias trial. You might have noticed, if you have been able to, that there's another crime news this week. Unfortunately, the topic out there has been thrill killing. It's been mentioned a few times in some cases. The case of Skylar Nice was one of them, and Tim Bosma out of Canada. They're saying that those are quite probably thrill kills, according to law enforcement. So this caused me to dig up the thread in the WebSleuth.com Resource Center about motives. And I wanted to remind you guys that anytime you're posting on or about a case and trying to figure out who done it, be sure to go to the Resource Center and look up the motives thread there, and that'll help you with your sleuthing, give you some ideas, and possibly you can find that right clue for a tip in a case.
Very good advice. My little thread talk
for the day. So.
Perfect.
you got to do the horn.
I love it. Perfect.
Okay, Tricia, 2 weeks ago I told everyone about a cold case that was very, very cold. It was a cold, cold, cold case. And then last week I told you about the hottest of cold cases I've ever talked about. It was so hot that it was pretty much over, but I still wanted to talk about, showcasing that case because it had been solved to show people how persistence and diligence can solve a cold case. That was Sherry mm-hmm. Lady. And now we're back to another very cold case. But this one could be hot by the end of the week if a clue proves
fruitful.
Ooh, let's
hope so.
Yeah, this case comes to us from member Elia 111, and it's about her brother, the brother she never met. The reason she never met her older brother is that he went missing while her mom was in the hospital giving birth to Elia 111.
Oh, wow.
David's wow. father, home with David, Elia's mm-hmm. father also, he was an extremely abusive man. It took a while for David's mother and sister to get away from him, but they finally did. Toward the end of her life, David's mom asked Elia 111 to continue looking for David, and that's exactly what mm-hmm. she's doing on clues.com. Earlier this month, there was a new article written about David's cold case, and in it, a neighbor from back then said that they remembered a pile of rocks that David's father created after David went missing.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI has agreed to search that area. Yay, that's what I'm talking about. That might be, you know, something to help. I hope that they find clues there by the end of the week. But will they find his remains, or is he out there somewhere not knowing who he really is? We
mm-hmm.
don't know. So, also, I wanted you to know that right after I posted this new case, almost 100 members looked at this thread. And I want to thank you all for asking questions and for posting with Elia 111. She wrote me after I told her that it was time for David to be showcased as the cold case of the week. And she was so excited and so happy and thanked me over and over that we were showcasing him and that I'm talking about him on your show tonight. So it would mean the
wonderful.
World to her. If you guys would go out there and post on the thread with her and talk with her, because she sounds like the nicest gal.
Kimster, let me just interrupt really quickly. While that thought is floating in the air, this is what I mean when I say, even if you don't think you can sleuth, even if you don't think you can do anything, you personally have something to offer by going on this thread and just saying, hey, I'm thinking of you, my thoughts are with you. It means so much to the victims, doesn't it, Kimster?
Oh, absolutely, you guys. You don't even know how much it means to them. Well, maybe you do, because Katie Cool Lady has talked to you about the Alexander family, and, you know, they're just representing thousands and thousands of people that are hurt by crime and murder, and because their loved ones were murdered or they're missing.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
The Alexanders are just, you know, an example of that. So everything
mm-hmm.
that Katie Cool Lady has told you about their pain, there's so many more people out there with the same pain, and you can make a difference every
yes, you can.
Single day. Mm-hmm. Every day you can. So if you want to help Elia 111 find out what happened to her brother David, please go to www.websleuths.com. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a picture of David along with a link to his thread, but only if you're a member of Web Sleuths. So please join today. And Tricia, how much does it cost to join websleuths.com today?
Well, today, since it's a holiday, we have a special on. It's the Oh My Flipping Heck, It's Absolutely Free special. It doesn't cost a thing. We don't ask for personal information. We don't take anything away from you. We just get an email address. We don't sell the email address. It stays private. It's really easy. So join websleuths.com today and be a part of this amazing group of people from all over the world who help victims from all over the world. Kimster, great show. Thank you so much, my dear. We will see you next week. And do remember, our sponsor for tonight's show would like you to support the Travis Alexander Fund. That's www.travisalexanderfund.com. And this is in memory of his wife, Nance. The opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and the guests. I take no responsibility for them. Trisha's True Crime Radio is completely separate. It's a separate entity from WebSleuths.com, LLC, and ForumsForJustice.org. So if you hear something on the radio show that gets you all wound up, you come to me. You don't go to WebSleuths or ForumsForJustice.org. That's how it works here on the show. We'll be back next week. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss true crime and current events. And we always do it with common sense. Good night, everyone.